before it hits us between the eyes and we don't know what's happening. Before we do that, though, there's, I don't even know how to express this because I've never, thank God, had to face chronic illness in my life. I had illnesses, had problems here and there, but they seem to clear up and then you move on. But to live with chronic illness has got to be incredible. And hopefully we can give you some suggestions as to how to deal with it and maybe into our society and how to deal with it. All that and a whole lot more coming your way right here on Pop Off. You know, we get sick, and sometimes it's over quickly because we have so many new possibilities in medicine, and that's just great. But what if you have a chronic illness? And we'll try and figure out what that means and what kind of illnesses can be chronic. Life can seem endless with pain and suffering. So that's why Dr. Michael Lockshin authored The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. You see, Dr. Lockshin has seen a lot as professor of medicine and obstetrics and gynecology at Weill Cornell Medicine and director of the Barbara Volker Center at the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Lockshin.
It's good to be with you, too.
Okay, now, what is classified as chronic illness?
Well, it's anything that lasts for a long period of time and doesn't have a clear end to it. Usually, with pain, acute things like fractures and so on, you're over that within a few weeks. That healing may take even a couple of months. After that, it becomes chronic.
Fantastic. You know, it's so hard to even imagine. You know, I've had my, as a matter of fact, I've got my my wrist in a cast right now. But I, you know, I'm hoping in a couple of 3 weeks after the last 4 weeks that it's going to go away, you know, and I'm going to get healed again. But to think, I can't even imagine thinking that I would have to stay this way the rest of my life with a cast on, you know?
Well, they, unfortunately, is the world that I live in, is people who can spend virtually their entire lives with one form of disability or another.
Wow. You know, with the medical advances that we have, I got to be honest, they're fabulous. But sometimes they just keep us alive but still in great pain. How does one deal with that? I mean, as a doctor, how do you deal with saying, you know, you're going to live this way the rest of your life?
Well, in a sense, that's what the book is about. You mentioned that already. How do you deal with great pain? One of the issues... You also said we know so much right now.
Yeah.
One of the issues is that we know a great deal, but there's also a great deal that we do not know.
Yeah.
And one of the real clues, from my point of view, of a successful management of a patient is to be able to distinguish between what is known and what is not known and negotiate that gray zone in between so that the physician understands that patient's priorities, the patient understands what the physician can do and what the physician wants to do, and then come to a mutual agreement rather than having one dictate to the other about how things will go.
You know, Dr. Lockshin, there's so many arguments out there. There was a time when in the news so much about doctors giving too much painkillers, too many medications. And then you got the other side saying, well, wait a minute, it's not enough. I mean, if a person's in pain, give them whatever it takes to keep them out of pain. That it's a fine line, isn't it? It's a balance.
Well, it is, but there's another balance, which perhaps you weren't thinking of as you asked that question. If I see a patient today, say at the beginning of an illness, one of the types of arthritis that I deal with,
mm-hmm.
and they have a lot of pain, there are some things I can do that will really relieve the pain, but 10 years later, the patient will be in much worse shape than if I only modulate the pain and do something different in between so that we don't get to disability.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by choosing priorities. Sometimes getting rid of the pain isn't the only thing that you have to do. You have to think 10 years in advance.
So I'm not quite sure I understand. Something that you would give for pain today could cause more problems later on. Why?
Well, because long-term side effects occur. For instance, the types of arthritis that I deal with are often treated with drugs that are referred to as corticosteroids, different from the steroids that athletes use.
Mm-hmm.
Cortisone is what people often will refer to it. That's really good at relieving arthritis, but if you take it for very long periods of time, the bones weaken, they fracture, other things happen. So you end up having to make a choice about being able to protect against side effects that take a decade to occur from what you can do today just as immediate pain relief.
Hmm. I had no idea that it's like 20% of Americans have some form of disability. Would that be considered a chronic illness then?
Generally, yes. The things that make the largest number there are things like back pain, diabetes, high blood pressure, and so on. And I guess one of the things that I would make a point of is that it's very possible to live a normal life with a chronic illness, so long as you're aware of what the limits are and you have access to care when something goes wrong.
Hmm. And the other thing, too, that always rolls around the back of my head is that, you know, patients, how do you handle a patient when you have to give them the diagnosis that they're going to probably have a chronic illness for the rest of their lives? I mean, it's got to be a psychological thing that you work with, too.
There's no question about that. And one of the issues is that I often deal with very young patients. The illnesses I deal with are usually, you know, peak in ages 15 to 35.
Mm.
Oftentimes, where they're mostly women, and so that kind of conversation usually takes place not just on the first day of a visit, but over months, in which I introduce the patient to the idea of what will happen, what will not. Patients have to be able to get their own understanding that it might come back again. They have to deal with side effects of medications. And so that's not an instantaneous conversation. It's a very long conversation, and it takes place over a very long period of time.
And I would imagine that there are some patients that they want to know everything, and they want to know what's going to happen, what the prognosis is, all that. Others are probably terrified. How do you decide which is which?
Well, what you just asked there is what the title of the book is about. It's about reading hidden messages and trying to see what differences there might be between what a patient says and what body language is telling you, or what questions they try to avoid, and making eye contact as this conversation is going on, and trying to figure out what they're capable of hearing at this time, what would be better deferred to a later time, and then sometimes simply just asking them, what do you want to know?
So who do you consider the boss, the doctor or the patient?
Oh, I think the patient always is. But I'd like to think that it's a mutually respectful relationship in which both sides are contributing.
Mm-hmm. Now, you also refer to a thing of picking up hidden messages from the patient. Like what? Give me an example.
Well, I give an example. One of the chapters in the book is about a woman who, as she was talking, the symptoms weren't making a lot of sense, but I saw that every time I asked her a question, she would look away, her head would go down, or she would mumble something.
Mm.
And I just, there was a point where the conversation was sufficiently unusual to me that I just asked her, "What are you hiding from me?" And it just opened up an entire world of things. And it turned out, in her case, it was terror.
Mm.
And she didn't want to, she's got a lot of medical knowledge. She's very well educated. And she was terrified, having gone on the internet, having learned various things about where the conversation was leading. But once we got over that moment, then we were able to talk very frankly to one another.
You know, it's amazing to me what you have to go through, Dr. Lakshin, because You know, a person may tell you one thing, but in the back of their head, they could be thinking another. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. That's an everyday event. And there are other things. I'm an older white male. Some of my patients are youngsters. Some are black. Some are Asian. They're largely female. There are lots of barriers that I'll never be able to cross, mm-hmm. but there are others where we can have the conversation.
Sure. The other thing, too, is the people are afraid, not maybe about the prognosis. They don't want to be dependent on someone else, or they don't want to take advantage of other people, or the pain thing, you know, can you help me with the pain? There's so many aspects of this. It's not just you got a chronic illness and you're going to have to live with it. There's so many aspects to it.
That's clearly true, but I'll tell you, there's something that's actually much worse from my point of view.
What's that?
And that is that many patients that I see don't actually look ill. They have family members who say, "You're just faking it. You can't be ill. Look how you look," and so on. And when they're literally completely exhausted, or they're in so much pain, but nobody believes it, and that probably is a harder thing to deal with than trying to hide your own feelings about where things are going.
The other thing that kind of bothers me to a certain extent, you know, I mentioned at the beginning that it's great that we have a lot of possibilities and medications and technology that we can deal with. But, you know, I also worry about big pharma. You know, they're out there pushing their drugs like crazy, especially, you know, when you see it on television. It's amazing. You know, go ask your doctor if you need this drug. And then you hear all the side effects, including death, and you're going, wait a minute. I need to have more information before I can just do that. You know what I mean?
And that's where the conversation between the doctor and the patient becomes important, because it's the doctor's job to, in a sense, deflate what you hear on television, what mm-hmm. you hear on in the ads, put it into a realistic context and say, yes, but when you talk about this drug or that drug. The other thing is that the way in which media deal with illness, and certainly in the commercial side of it, they tend to imply that everything is cut and dried and very absolute. But in my world, sometimes it takes weeks or months for symptoms to evolve before you get a picture of what the real problem is. Mm. Symptoms come and go over months. Sometimes the patient will spend 2 weeks ill, and then the next 6 months well, and then become ill again. You have to be able to watch that and try to figure it out. And it isn't just an instantaneous, oh, yes, this is X, therefore you do Y. There's a lot of thinking about possibilities and testing ideas and finding them right or finding them wrong and taking a different path when you're dealing with chronic illness.
One other thing that, and I do not envy you being a doctor because of this, so many doctors maybe don't want to get into trouble for prescribing too much medication. How do you feel about that?
It's a big problem. It's a problem in both directions. But one of the things we have to do pretty much every visit is review medications. Do you really need to take this one? Mm-hmm. If you don't want to take this one, here's an alternative. And I have a lot of patients who will just simply say no, and they'll ask me about diets, they'll ask me about vitamins, and they'll ask me about various herbal things. And sometimes the best answer is, we've got time, try it out, see how it works. If it works, fine. We didn't have to go to the pharmaceutical industry for it. And if it doesn't, you'll learn and you'll come back and we'll discuss it again.
How do you feel about the possibility of dealing with holistic physicians too and trying some things that are alternative?
You know, it's pretty much a daily occurrence with me. Because it isn't so much that I'm asking patients to do it. In my world, pretty much everyone does it, whether they tell me about it or not. And so what I've done is gotten used to the ideas of what people will do, and that often depends on what their heritage is and a variety of other things. Asian patients will do one thing, Caribbean patients will do another, Jewish patients will do another, and so on. So I've gotten a feel for the types of things people will do, and I ask them to be as open about it as they can be. Sometimes there will be very clear conflicts with what the plans I'm suggesting are. Sometimes it's, well, let's do them both and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But I don't have I certainly don't have a hard fixed rule that you can do this or you can't do that. I have suggestions sometimes when I know that it may be harmful or if I think something is going to go bad. But it's a negotiation again.
But it's great that you are open to talking about it, because there are some patients that will go to their doctor and they know they'll get a flat no to try anything alternative, and they might do it on their own, which could be very dangerous, because sometimes I mean I'm a supplement taker. Believe me, I laughingly say I rattle when I walk. But, you know, I want my doctor, my traditional doctor, to know what I'm taking so that it doesn't interfere with something that they're giving me. You know what I mean?
Yes, I would fault the physician who just turns the patients down flat or says don't do it or don't tell me about it, that, because it just is missing the whole point of why you're a doctor in the first place.
Yeah, you're there to help the person, and if they try something and it doesn't work, I mean, I've been there. You know, I've tried a few things, and I go, it doesn't work, so I don't do it anymore. But at least I took a shot at it. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. The other side of that, though, is that in on this side of the country, probably in California as well, there are also people who are cheating in the system. And so we've had the past history of looking at things that were advertised as herbal medicines and analyzing them and discovering in them very powerful and very dangerous medicines, anti-inflammatory drugs and other sorts of things that were simply fraud. And the unfortunate thing is there's no way to know that in advance except to deal with reputable dealers. And be aware of what you're taking and being certain that it's to the best you can that it is what they say it is.
Matt, you know, as I mentioned earlier, medical advances are fabulous. They really are. And I think we're growing a great deal. I said, I just don't know why we're not at the point where, and I'm a Star Trek fan, you know, they had that little gadget that goes up and down the body, can tell you anything that's happening in the body. I have a feeling, and I've been told by some technicians, that it actually does exist, but it's just too expensive to use right now. Where are we going with medicine today? You know, is it still the way it was for the last, you know, 40, 50, 60 years? Or when are we going to make a jump, a leap?
We're much closer to the Star Trek version of it than anything in the past. And there are certain things, certainly the genetic diseases, many of the malignancies, which are almost at that Star Trek way. It isn't that you're going to wave something in front of your body, but it'll be a blood sample or a saliva sample or something. It will give you a lot of clues for that. But the other side that is not paid a lot of attention to is differences in socioeconomic status, differences in habits and diets and things that make a huge difference in what a patient will do or will choose to do or can do. There are places in New York City, for instance, in which there are no drugstores just simply don't stock medication because they get robbed so many times. And so patients simply can't get their medicines. There are people who can't get to the hospital because it takes them 3 hours in a train, in switching trains, to get to where they need to go. Those things are also really important in what happens in illness. And I don't see the Star Trek wand is ever going to pick up that aspect of dealing with patients.
Yeah. How do you feel about the old-fashioned way of, you know, doctors going to a person's house? I mean, when I was little, teeny tiny, a couple of times that happened, but that nothing since then. But, you know, that way you get to know the patient, their background, and the lifestyle is important. I said, if you have a doctor who doesn't ask, you know, how are you doing? How's the relationship? How is your work? Are you stressed? Those are all things that, affect a person in addition to whatever the prognosis is.
Yeah, I'm laughing at that because Weill Cornell Medical School, in fact, has a course in which, for the medical students, which they do that. They go to patients' houses to
really
learn how they live. And so that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is that the hospitals are all corporations now.
Yeah.
Insurers all do things. And they say, move them in and out. You've got to see X number of patients in so many minutes. So one aspect of the world is pushing right hard up against the other aspect of the world.
Yeah.
In chronic illnesses, because we see patients over and over years, I certainly do get to know them. I get to know their families. I sometimes do see them in their homes and so on. But it isn't like making house calls. It's getting your patients become your friends, and I hope I become their friends.
Oh, no, and I just think it's important. And I realize, like you said, it's corporations and it's, you know, bean counters that are running the place,
right,
which is bad because, you know, it's the doctors. I want my advice from you, not some bean counter. I always, and I've said this on the air, I may get into trouble for saying it, but I don't care. If you have a doctor who's giving you the bum's rush, you know, here, take a pill, go home, find another doctor. I need to have somebody who cares about me enough to ask those questions, to find out what my lifestyle is. Have I changed jobs? How's the family? How's your stress level? Do you sleep? Are you eating okay? Those are all things that would you as a doctor, you got to know.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree with you more.
It's amazing. Now, do you have a website, by the way?
Yes, it's my first name, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. My last name, Lockshin, it's L-O-C-K-S-H-I-N, and oh my gosh, www.michaellockshin.com.
.com, okay. And the book itself, The Prince of the Ruined Tower, I assume it's available every place, is it?
Yes. Amazon and Barnes & Noble and places like that.
Fantastic.
Have it. It's available electronically and on paper.
Well, Dr. Lockshin, keep up the good work. Keep plugging away because we need people who just care about us as human beings, not just a patient walking through the door.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And I hope you'll come back and visit again.
All right, I'd love to.
Take care.
Thank you.
And again, you can go to Michael Lockshin, L-O-C-K-S-H-I-N, michaellockshin.com. Name of the book, The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. It's one of those things we all need to know about.
Think beyond the bunny this Easter. Adopt a real living manatee.